We are back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with Janos Starker, and we are talking about professionalism. It seems to me that one of the things that we can learn, maybe must learn from music, is this idea of professionalism. And it goes back, in a way, to what Bill was saying about what is it that you are doing when you get these people together? What are these laws?
Well, you may have read at one time the piece that I've written, which I called The Mozart Meter, where an old German professor, I've written the piece about 35 years ago, at the early time of the electronic revolution, compares on tape a variety of performances of the same work. And there are parameters beyond which, if you do something, it's bad. Within the parameters, there are limitless variations how a particular piece can be performed, how a phrase can be played. But you're not supposed to play out of tune. One more. You're not supposed to play notes which are not clarifying the note values that the composer wrote. Then there are freedom applications, which we have all kinds of names for it, of the rubatos and the agagics and so on. But they have rules that if you lengthen a note that within a bar, you're supposed to make up for it. In the rubato rule, if you play all kinds of stressing notes because of harmonic or melodic importances, then at the end of the phrase, the balance has to be restored. These are a couple of those laws. Mm-hmm. And then there are laws that when you play a note, it's not supposed to start after its beginning, because notes are supposed to start with consonants and not with vowels. And you're not supposed to play a phrase within which the dynamic application is like a stormy sea. And you're not supposed to fall in love with notes and beyond their importance, just because you love that note, start shaking your fingers and your head, and then make all kinds of facial contortions. However, these elements appeal to a large segment of the audiences.
Oh, you mean violating these rules?
Violating the rules. Because the fact is, for instance, that we know that why is the largest part of the population given to appreciate popular music? Because popular music using the basic elements of extreme speed, extreme slowness, extreme volume, loudness and softness. Mind you.
That'll also get you a standing ovation, you once told me.
And on top of it, that if you keep throwing your body around like a maniac and keep indicating facially your feelings about that note or that phrase, then the public is having a great old time.
Well, this goes back to that notion of perceived music, of those people mm-hmm. who are capable of perceiving music. And it sort of puts it in a broader context. It's beginning to sound as if this is not a hard, fast line. That, you know, there are people who sort of get it.
That's what the parameters
say. Degrees of freedom.
It's a very thin line, for instance, that how much motion is not contrary to the musical line. Therefore, it is natural. However, if you keep moving against the musical line, then it becomes a stage act.
Well, and then let's talk about this business, about what is the line between entertainment and maintaining, can I say, the integrity of the music?
Well, we can talk about it, but then you're going to stay here till next week, next month.
I brought extra tape.
Okay.
The fact is that popular music has its values, and when you hear Sinatra sing certain songs, it's as high art as it can be, and there are a number of people in the popular field who producing music on the highest level, except that they deal with different kind of material, and that material requires the kind of motions. When you hear the great pop singers and the contortion on their face, that is because of the text, what they are saying, and their innermost feelings are displayed. But classical musicians supposed to send the message with the sounds that they produce, not with theatricality.
Bill said something.
In opera,
it's opera. Bill said something to me the other day that has really stuck in my mind, and I would like you to explore for us. He was saying that the left brain, our analytical brain, has language. It has words, and we all think that, well, of course. But that the right brain, where music lives, doesn't have speech, but But it does, doesn't it? Isn't that what music does? Doesn't it give give language for the rest of your brain?
I will not pretend that I know exactly that to which point the left brain functions.
I accept that may be a little more rigorous a distinction than it needs to be.
Whenever this topic was brought up, I was always hoping that somewhere we'll discover that in between there is the coordinating factor, the middle brain. And I prefer to refer to my middle brain that controls the left and the right. There might be a
which I think is what I was seeing yesterday as I watched you with other musicians who were not as accomplished as you, but this community of music making where the intellectual requirements were very great, and the technical requirements were very great, and the physical requirements were very great, and there really was an integration of left brain, right brain, middle brain. But is there not something to be said that particularly in a time when we are so analytical, that there still is voice to be given to the rest of the human experience, and isn't that part of what
but
music
the rest
does
of the
for
human
us?
Experience is what we're supposed to express through our music. You've heard me say already in the past that I am not particularly fond of the idea that that musicians explain with very poetic words what they are planning to do. I prefer to express poetry through my music. But in the educational field, for instance, when somebody plays, instead of telling them, play it nicer, I say, do this with the right arm, or make a crescendo, or make sure that you take a breath before you're going on. So which means in the information field, what I'm doing is to clearly explain that what you may do in order to change the either the dynamics or the instrumental approach or the continuity of a phrase, instead of just simply saying, well, sing more. But I lived my life with great conductors, and the great conductor, somebody said, second oboe too loud. The other said, sing more, bring me beauty or something.
Yeah.
It's a rich language.
Well, the explicitness of understanding why it doesn't sound the way you want it to sound and then being able to fix it, again, takes me back to this concept of the professional.
That's what I'm trying to do with all these students, so that means that when I touch their arm to feel the contact with the string, whether they notice the difference. If they notice the difference, then they can go home and then they can experiment until they find their own answers. And there are many answers.
I am often talking about the people who play their music with their faces, classical music. I wonder sometimes watching, because I've seen some very famous touring artists, soloists, who didn't perform very well. And I wonder, do they not know? Do they know and not care? Do they know and care but just can't quite manage it today? Or are they not those professionals of whom you speak?
All the above. For the simple reason that there are some young people who show up in my class or I see them on stage, and they can't help it. It's in their nature. However, the majority of them is copying, aping somebody who is very successful, and they have seen them doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's what bothers me. And one of the things that I have to find out, can they control themselves or not? I mean, yesterday you may have seen some young person who every time when there's some kind of difficulty, puts his tongue out. Mm-hmm. Now already I reached a point that 75 of the times he becomes aware of it, so which means he releases the tension and then he can produce better music. Now, seemingly, now what the tongue got to do with Beethoven, let's say. But it has a great deal to do. Now, the unfortunate thing is that now a large number of the very successful younger generation concert artists are simply using the stage mannerisms of the pop singers.
Mm. Back to entertainment, isn't it?
That they bend down to the floor to emphasize a dramatic moment in the music. Or before the phrase comes, they already take up an angelic look on their face. Now something beautiful is coming.
Here it comes.
That I find disturbing to me.
Something beautiful is going to come when we return in just a moment. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with Janos Starker. We are in Bloomington, Indiana. We hope that you will be with us when we all return shortly.